Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe. And as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Church Answers.
Okay, we're going to do a country song.
Okay.
What if I had done this? What if I had gone this path? What if I had not left it alone? You know, something like that. Just an old country song about regrets, remorse. So here we are in Nashville, and we got kind of a country song. That's what we're going to be talking about on the podcast today. And for those of you who enjoyed my solo music, you can book me.
Wow.
Book me. Always thank you to Midwestern Seminary, who puts up not only with my podcast and Jonathan's podcast, but even allows me to sing on their sponsorship podcast at times.
Wow. And you can also...
Hey, Jonathan, you got a Midwestern...
I do. Midwestern wow. What Cool is the- Canteen, it's called.
Wow.
And it's my coffee for the morning.
That's good.
But
I've never seen one of those.
Yeah, it's neat. It's one of my clean canteens, not cool canteen, clean canteen. And I got it when I was there last year.
Cool. So, the church, Midwestern.
There you go. And, you can get your MDiv from Midwestern, not just a coffee mug. But because that is the primary track for ministry preparation for full-time ministry leaders, it gives you everything you need and nothing you don't. It's 81 hours, and you can join other students in vibrant Kansas City and train in a unique collaborative environment focused on the local church or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. You can start your training today at mbts.edu/mdiv.
All right, let's go to these regrets. We're going to cover five of the regrets. Obviously, not an exhaustive list, but we will cover five of them. Yeah.
Do you have any regrets from whenever you pastored?
Oh, you know some of them.
Well, what if I'd stayed longer?
Okay. Yeah. What if I'd stayed longer? What if I had asked for a raise? In other words, compensation, mm-hmm. ended up leaving a church. What if I had not had that outburst at that particular person? An outburst may be an overstatement, but I was anything but fruit of the Spirit when he really challenged me in an ugly way in a business meeting. I think I can make a long list of regrets that I have had in pastoral ministry, and you could probably do it in life and life way, mm-hmm. in marriage and family, and all those things.
I think we all have a lot of those what if moments in life.
And when you get to be 63 years old, Jonathan,
you have even more.
You got even more of those. So but it's, you know, one regret I'm looking at and saying, I think I'm going to look back on that actually is, that actually is a good decision. You say tongue in cheek, but I say with truthfulness. I think if I had not announced my retirement at Lifeway when I did, I would have regrets. The only regret that I have now is should I have done it at 60 instead of 63?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I know. You were pushing
I was like,
the other way.
83. Hey.
Oh, good gracious. Roll him in, boys. Let him lead Lifeway.
All right. Well, a lot of the regrets that you mentioned and we mentioned in here at the top are like personal pastoral regrets. A lot of these, though, actually all five of these, are church, like what a church would be regretting. And so we're going to start with what if we had relocated?
And you know who usually are expressing these regrets? What group? Laity.
Yeah, the lay leaders.
Lay leaders, because I think you might have been a part of something. I know it was a consultation request. I can't remember if you were in on the conversation. I think Sam ended up handling it. And it was a church in your state, in Louisiana. The lay leader who called about a consultation said it may be too late. Mm. If we had relocated 10 to 15 years ago, it would have been better.
Yeah.
And again, they weren't abandoning the community, but the community was having fewer residences.
Yeah.
It was becoming more commercial, they told us.
Mm-hmm. Well, we went to a church in Lake Charles, Louisiana, when we lived there, that had relocated about a decade before we got there. And they kind of did it at the right time, because all the population from Lake Charles was moving out of the downtown area down to the southern suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
They moved
with the population.
There, moved with the people, and were kind of reaping the benefits of that, being like the Baptist church in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And the first Baptist downtown was still downtown, and they were, you know, all but dead at that time.
Okay, well, there is an example. So Here's what I ask someone when they refuse to locate. It's particularly if it's laity opposition that they refuse to. I say, okay, tell me what specifically you're going to be doing in an aggressive way in great commission obedience to reach the community where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Answer that question before you say we won't leave. Many times, what they are saying is we will not leave. And we will not reach the community.
They want to just keep doing what they're doing.
Yep.
Which oftentimes is nothing.
The community may be transitioning. In some cases, there may not be a community there anymore. It may have transitioned to commercial or industrial. That happens as well. It's not just that the community changes from ethnicity, race, or whatever. Sometimes the residents actually depart from that area.
Well, and sometimes the church is growing so much that they need to move just because they're out of space.
Exactly.
Church I was at in college, First Baptist Hattiesburg, now Venture Church down in Hattiesburg, they moved not because people weren't coming, not because they weren't impacting the neighborhood. They moved because they just needed space. They had a very old building and needed to update facilities, and it was going to cost just as much to update where they were, and they didn't have parking, or they could go out to Oak Grove where they are now, and they had plenty of room, plenty of parking, plenty of space, upgraded facilities. Which do you do? I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer. People were still driving there. They were going to be driving to the other one anyway. So they did that, and they've never looked back, and it's just been a phenomenal ride for them. And so in Harrisburg Baptist in Tupelo, where my wife grew up, same thing happened with them. They just growing too much downtown, didn't have the room, moved out to the suburbs of Tupelo, and now just, you know, blowing it going.
Sometimes you can have both and.
Yes.
If the facilities are okay, you can stay and then open a second campus.
We talked to a church a couple years ago about possibly doing that.
Yes, exactly. You and I are recording this in the Church Answers office in this uniquely designed studio of Church Answers, and we are
a table and two mics.
we are about 4 miles, depending upon which one you go to, from First Methodist Church of Franklin.
That's right,
and they moved. They got more acre in Franklin, Tennessee. The amount of acreage they have is unbelievable.
It's amazing.
They obviously
right there on Mac Hatcher.
They obviously bought it many years ago, and it is so big. We mentioned this on a previous podcast, but it is so big that they have community gardens
and
not many places can have big gardens,
especially
and have storage areas.
Yeah,
there, but they stayed also in downtown Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
They knew downtown Franklin, historic opportunities to reach people, many people staying there. So they did both and. Not all churches can afford to keep two places, but they did both and.
Yeah. There's another Methodist church just south of Franklin going out toward Murfreesboro. I drove by it the other day. It's right there by Page High School.
Okay.
And they built a brand new facility literally half a mile down the road from a historic facility that they had been in. And I think the week I was driving, it was like the 1st of October, they were just starting services in the new facility, but they were keeping the old facility too because it was a historic landmark. Been there for a couple of centuries.
Again, their finances and when you make those kind of decisions. But going back to this issue there, I'm hearing it now, Jonathan, more and more because we are seeing the acceleration of decline. That sounds like an oxymoron almost, but we're seeing
things are declining faster.
Yeah, they're declining faster because cultural Christianity is dying. And now they're saying, oh, we really did make a bad decision. Can you help us now? And most of the time, the answer is no.
Because it's too late.
It's too late. It's like a terminal disease that was not treated early when it was not terminal, when you had the opportunity to survive.
Well, a lot of times that's where the replant comes in.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. A church could come in with a new identity and some new people and replant it right there and use facilities for kingdom use.
And maybe even a new name, which brings us to what if we had changed our name?
Yeah, this one will be controversial because anytime we talk about changing name, people will criticize and say, well, that's just a consumer mentality.
Marketing tactic.
And
sometimes it is.
Sometimes, sometimes it is nothing but pragmatic marketing. But the question that I often ask is our name confusing more than is it marketing palpable? Is there something about it? There are a number of churches that have location addresses and they are no longer at that location.
Hunter Street Baptist Church.
Yeah. Hunter Street Baptist Church, from Downtown Birmingham is now Hunter Street Baptist Church in Hoover, Alabama, not near Hunter Street anymore. However, it transitioned pretty well. It's not the best example in the world.
But it's a good example of being able to keep that and move.
Okay. So another one that was a very prominent church when I was in seminary was Walnut Street Baptist Church.
In Louisville.
In Louisville.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it not on Walnut anymore?
No. I think it's MLK. I think they changed the name of the
street.
Yes.
That's not fair.
And what I remember extremely well, I was a student at Southern, and they had a major, major issue about changing the name. I believe Wayne Dehoney was the pastor, former president of the SBC, for those of you who have SBC history. And they had a major vote on it, and it was voted down.
Wow.
And as far as I know, Walnut Street is not nearly the church it once was. Is it because of the name change? I don't know. You know, but you know, are there regrets? By the way, do you know what they wanted to vote to become?
No.
First Baptist, because there was no First.
There was no First Baptist.
There
Louisville.
Was no First Baptist Louisville. They wanted to vote to become First Baptist. That was in the name where the branding of First Baptist would have been in the 80s would have been really, really good.
Huh. And they said no.
And then
that's
the church,
fascinating.
And the church voted it down. Yeah, exactly. So I was actually a seminary student and a banker working part-time when I was keeping up with all of that, because I would remember people from my banking world coming up to me and say, Rainer, what's going on at that church? Because it wasn't far from where I worked downtown.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, the next question, what if we had gotten outside help?
Yeah, here's the area of consultation, coaching, church answers, whatever the case may be.
Well, often, like number one, this one seems to be asked too late.
It does. I'm going to say something about that later.
Okay.
You just kind of triggered all kind of thoughts in my mind right now. But you're right. Sometimes the patient goes to the doctor when he or she is too sick. And that is what is happening in consultations. We get more help us fix something than help us look to the future because things are going well.
Because if you would have just called us 5 years earlier, things would have been totally different.
And we could have pointed out a path of hope. Church consultation is not always received well by some people in some churches. It depends
on what the consultation says, right?
Well, I'm just talking about the concept of church consultation.
Gotcha.
It can be perceived to be a business tool, something that is not right for the church. It can be perceived to be this monetary issue. So not all churches will receive it well, but Jonathan, I may be wrong on my numbers, so I don't want to be precise, but I would say right now, I am hearing from 1 to 2 churches a week that want some type of help, usually a consultation, and it's too late.
Wow.
It is just too late. And I don't know if I've heard anyone express it this way, but at least implicitly they're saying, what if we had gotten outside help when it could have actually helped us?
Yeah.
And instead of, can you move us from hospice care to survival, which is a lot of the questions that we have right
wow.
now.
And again, that's where the replanting comes in, because maybe that's the next question. It's like these are getting increasingly severe.
Right.
What if we had been acquired?
That one is difficult because the time to be acquired is often before you are willing to admit it as a church that you need to be acquired.
Oh, that's good.
Because once you get to a point where you're down to 7, 8, 15, 20 people.
Well, that becomes the last option.
And sometimes it's a little bit too late because the facilities are too run down. There's some members of the church that just say, let's go in and they have a sentiment, let's sell it to this company over here. Let's don't even think about acquisition.
Please don't do that. Let another church keep the gospel work going there.
I know.
I'm just begging churches.
Yes.
Please don't do that.
I know. Just think of all the needs of church plants and churches that are outgrowing their current facilities. I ride around Spring Hill, Tennessee sometimes with my son Jess, or even without him, and I'll look at some of these churches that have been around a long time. We're in a rented facility, and I'm just thinking, you know, I don't want to take them over, but before they die, I would love for us to have a chance just to be in that facility.
Mm-hmm.
So. The opportunity to keep a gospel presence there. That's the thing about it. They're dying churches, and this is one of many examples in Spring Hill, Tennessee, one of the fastest growing demographics there are It's not all about demographics.
Yeah. Well, we had lunch yesterday with Clayton King at a conference, and he was talking about their, I think it was the Greenville campus. They had been in the convention center. They've been temporary like for years. I think it was 8 years, he said, at New Spring in Greenville, South Carolina, their Greenville campus. And the main campus in Anderson, but the Greenville campus been in the convention center. They had a church that was a pretty good-sized church from what I understand, because the sanctuary, I think he said, was going to hold about 825 when they finished renovations. So, but this church was down to like 40 people.
I know.
And 700, and I think he said it, the current seating structure was 750, I think, in pews. And they gave the church building and facilities debt-free, like two New Spring.
With some cash as in order to do the remodeling. So what's left in the bank.
Exactly. And but that was a case of Greenville, they could not find a space big enough because Greenville's growing so fast and just the economy there. It's a lot similar to what we see here in Nashville.
Exactly.
And what they, I mean, they just basically had them come to them and say, hey, we want to give you this. And that will extend the life of not just that church, but that gospel impact in that community.
Yep.
Because they're doing that.
So it would have
gone away. A huge decision.
And on the other side, that New Spring campus was constrained by its facilities. It was growing, but it was growing like pushing at the walls type of growing. And now they have the opportunity for a new facility.
Yeah. And speaking of New Spring, Clayton King, man, he's done a phenomenal job. We're going to have to have him on the podcast. We talked to him yesterday about that.
Yeah, he had me on three of his podcasts, if I recall.
Two or three, something like that, yeah.
So I need. But, we really need to listen to him. He
has done a phenomenal job in putting that church on the way.
So as we're recording this, you and I were at Pipeline Conference by Lifeway in downtown Nashville yesterday from the recording of this podcast. And we had an opportunity to talk to Clayton, had an opportunity to spend time with Carrie Newhoff, Shannon and Brian Miles. It was
all friends of the pod. Kevin Peck from the Austin Stone.
Kevin was great. Well, I love all of these guys. So
Tammy Heim.
Tammy Heim was in there. So it was just good to connect with people. I actually had someone say, ask me this question some time ago. Don't you and Carrie Newhoff compete? And I said, now tell me what you're talking about. Well, basically what they're saying, you're both in practical ministry, local church.
Similar audiences.
Similar audiences. And I said, well, in the commercial sense of the word, probably so, but we don't think of it that way.
No.
We are great friends. We share things. We're transparent with one another, and we learn from each other. I came away yesterday. He said, Tom, have you considered? And then, he said, I don't think I'm equipped to do this, but have you considered? And as you know, I started hyperventilating over his idea.
Yes.
And it was, and then
you get the ooze later on in the evening.
Stuff is the brain is oozing out the ears. And then
Brian Miles. Oh,
said
man.
The same thing.
Yeah, Brian, you have no idea what you started.
Yes. Brian, if you're listening to this podcast, we know that Belay sponsors the blog, but if you're listening to this podcast, you are to blame for the next 18 months of my life.
Yes. But it was fantastic to see all those guys and to talk with them and see their perspective on things. But yeah, finally, what if we had not run off the pastor?
Here is the syndrome.
Yeah, this is what Azalea Baptist has been thinking for the last 25 years.
Some of them have, for sure. Some of them have. You're talking about me?
Yeah.
I don't know if they ran me off, Jonathan. I ran myself off because I couldn't.
Okay, that's fair.
Because we did not have enough. We were on food closet.
You were dipping into the food pantry for the church.
I was signing out. Usually where I would sign out for indigent people, I was signing my name to get food.
Because you was indigent.
I was indigent. And I've told you my compensation back then with a family of five, it was well below poverty level. But just for clarity, no one, they loved me there.
Yeah.
I left for financial reasons, but I did not ask. You remember you asked me at the first of this? I did not ask them when the budget had more than tripled. I did not ask them to increase my pay out of pride and ego.
But there are some churches, and I'm not saying they did this,
yes,
that will refuse raises and they, in a sense, run off the pastor because he's basically left with no other choice.
Yeah, that's called a starvation dismissal. Mm-hmm. And they're just trying to run and forcing the
issue.
And it's
not just the pastor. It can be any position.
Right.
Freeze out people, and just the way they treat them. they basically run off somebody without running them off.
So I was talking to our mutual friend from Lifeway, Daniel Ems, and isn't he Canadian as well?
He is.
Another Canadian, and Daniel wrote a book that I wrote a forward to, No Silver Bullets.
Fantastic book. We had him on the podcast. Check out that episode.
Yep. His thesis is the same for pastors. Don't look at the pastor as the silver bullet. Yeah, a leader, but don't say we're going to get a 34-year-old pastor and now we're going to reach young people.
Yeah.
It just does not work that way. If you're not reaching people now because you're unwilling to follow leadership, you're not going to reach them when a 34-year-old comes in and provides and leadership.
Probably going to be even worse because you're going to resent that he's young and trying to lead.
Yep, and he should. After all, that's what we pay him to do.
Yeah.
And now he's leading and he's doing things that we don't like.
But so, if you do run off your pastor.
Yeah, perfect segue for Vanderblumen.
Vanderblumen Search Group is the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of thousands, they've helped thousands of churches, not hundreds of thousands.
They will at some point.
Yeah, they're getting there. Just like yours, find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. Follow up for this, Dr. Rayner. If your church, or if you realize that your church has done one of these five, what do you do?
Well, one of the things that you could do is call for a consultation.
So,
one of the areas that you could do is say, I want you to come in and look and see if there's any opportunity. I know that
Church Answers is
expanding into consultation. Mm-hmm. Is it a tab at Church Answers?
Churchanswers.com/consultation, I think, is the address.
Or go to Church Answers
and click on the button.
So now we're providing not only the coaching, but we're also providing on-site consultation. You could sell your church. You could give away your church, your facility. So there are all kinds of possibilities of how to remedy this. But if you wait too long, it's going to be a lot more painful than if you do it now.
Final question. If they have run off the pastor, is that something that you should maybe try to apologize for? Is that something worth seeking out?
Yeah. I read
if you realize what happened.
Read a powerful article recently about I believe it was Assembly of God Church. I know it was in Madison, Indiana, because that's where my first pastorate was, that actually had a time of repentance for a series of times that they run off pastors.
Wow.
It was a powerful article. For some reason, I want to say Bob wrote it, Bob Smiatana, but I'm probably wrong.
Uh-huh.
But I read it this past week.
That's fascinating.
They had a time of repentance for running off pastors, led by the new pastor.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And in doing so, half the church left because they didn't want to do it, but he did it anyway.
I think I did see this now. I have to find it. I'll put the link in the show notes.
Okay.
So I'll find the article and put the link in the show notes.
Okay. So
fantastic.
You want me to sing some more about regrets and country songs? Okay.
We're good. So thanks for joining us again today here on Rayner on Leadership. You can subscribe in podcast, any of your podcast apps or on iTunes, Google Play, or we're in Spotify now. We talked about that on the last episode. We're now in Spotify. You can subscribe in Spotify. I know a lot of you use that. Check that out and join us at TomRayner.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.